Who's watching your home when you're not there?
It could be a burglar.
Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them.
Don't be an easy target for intruders.
Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844.
$99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers.
Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to GIST Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. GIST stands for Getting the Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creators of all kinds. For more information on GIST, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Oh, yes, my favorite theme song. Hello, everyone listening and all 50-something of you. This is Monica, your favorite GIST jockey. I'm here in the office, and I've my boss has gotten cats, so I'm being accosted by cat dander in my face. So if I sound funny, don't make fun of me and don't send me emails about it. It's a hostile work environment, and I'm on the line with a not-so-hostile Mel Smothers, who is a Brooklyn-based artist. He has a series of paintings called Dear Andy, and Smothers adopts the postcard format in his compositions, with each work personally addressed to Andy Warhol. So beginning with Dear Andy and replete postcard postmarks rendered in paint, each piece incorporates Warholian images in order to establish a posthumous dialogue with the seminal pop artist. He integrates text into his paintings following the tradition of such artists like Vincent van Gogh and Charles Marion Russell, the 19th century landscape painter of the American West, both of whom combine drawings and text in their personal correspondence. Smothers juxtaposes word and image to express his connection to Warhol's work. After Warhol's estate in Montauk was sold in 2006, Smothers visited the sprawling 5.6-acre oceanfront property on the eastern tip of Long Island, and in his words, to get a sense of the place, very nice, during that time he was struck by the contrast between the natural environment and Warhol's mass-produced pop art images. In response, he began making postcard-style paintings to report back on the things he saw in Montauk. The compositions feature some of Warhol's most recognizable images, including portraits of celebrities such as Elizabeth Taylor, Marlon Brando, and Marilyn Monroe, and the unmistakable Campbell's soup cans, organic subjects which normally appear in a natural setting, such as jellyfish, bird life, and even inanimate objects that might be found washed up on the beach, dominate the faintly rendered pop art images. The result is a compelling body of work that juxtaposes two disparate subjects, the world of pop culture, which Warhol embraced, and Smothers' observations of the natural world. Thus, the dialogue is established. Smothers is a graduate of Cal State University and the University of Idaho. Smothers relocated from California to the East Coast in 1999 to pursue his career in New York City, and his work has been included in both solo and group shows throughout the U.S., as well as in public art and multimedia projects and the performing arts. Everyone, welcome. Mel Smothers, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks. That's quite an introduction.
I know. I'm almost out of breath.
You know, you seem to know more about me than I know about myself. That's good.
That is the key, sir. Oh, man. But let's get serious here. You are doing so much stuff. Now, are you obsessed with Andy Warhol? And, how did you get to this point? Why Andy?
Well, it didn't start out with Andy. I had decided I was living, my studio was on the Upper East Side,
mm-hmm.
and which was an unusual place for an artist to be. There wasn't very many artists around where I lived.
Right.
And I got in the habit of going over to the Metropolitan Museum there at Central Park.
Right.
It's just a fascinating place for somebody from California. And,
mm-hmm.
I would go and sketch. I did ideas and took a lot of photos when I was in there. And I went to one exhibition where Van Gogh's letters to Emile Bernard. And in their correspondence, they would do drawings. And I really liked that. For some reason, it just really appealed to me. I've always done postcards to my children, and I've always liked doing that. And when I saw that Van Gogh did it, and then I had seen a postcard like that from Charlie Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, you know, this really appealed to me. So that was in my mind. And when I started out with a Picasso painting that I really liked, and I did it on about a 4-foot by 4-foot piece just to see if I could paint it like Picasso painted it.
Right.
And then I went back into the museum, and I became very interested in Chinese pottery. And so just over the top of the image that Picasso had, I started painting in other things from the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of got this idea of two separate subjects and how they connected up for me, you know.
Right. And so prior to being why did you move? Well, I understand why you moved to New York, but what were you doing prior to that? Like, what was your education like? Were you in school to be an artist?
Well, I always thought I was going to be an artist. Tell you, Martha,
yeah.
When I got, and in the 60s, I came of age in the 60s in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to that point, after the 60s, I just was tired of being broke and living a hippie lifestyle. I played music on the street in San Francisco. I built terrariums. I built little sculpture pieces. I can remember a gallery. I put two pieces in this gallery, and when I got, after 2 weeks, I was just nervous as heck with these pieces that they were showing. And after 2 weeks, no one bought them. So I took them out of the gallery. I thought I was a loser on this thing. So I eventually, in my late 20s, I got, my parents had an office, and they were always saying, well, come, you should come to work for us. And I really got tired of being broke, and I became a capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
So for 15 years, I thought maybe I was going to become an art collector, and I did. I collected some pieces regionally, but I really loved to be active and be participating in it with a hands-on rather than the collector. And then my business world fell apart. The money went away, the wife and
oh,
all
man.
The toys. They were just all gone, and it happens. It's just the way it is, and
mm-hmm.
And so I started looking back at what made me happy, a thing that guys go through, and one of my buddies told me to go to Wayne Thiebaud over at UC Davis and sit in his classes, and you'll find out if you're an artist or not.
Huh.
And from that tip, I went in there, and Wayne was, saw me in the class and asked me what I was doing in there, and I sort of explained the same story I just told you and the listeners, and
mm-hmm.
and he started handing me books and you know, he was telling me a lot about art that I didn't know, and I had no idea about art history.
Mm-hmm.
So all that, I just thought art was supposed to be something that you spontaneously produced, and it became like Picasso.
Right.
But I found out it was a lot of work. There was a lot behind it. And to that point, I realized that without an art education, for me, I was just going to be like repeating what other people had done.
Right.
And Wayne kind of explained that. And it was really great. I felt at home, and I loved it. And I went and finished my degree at Sac State.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in studio art. And by the time I finished that degree, I realized that I couldn't do art to make money. The years I'd spent in business, I thought, oh, well, now I can do art and figure out how to make money with it. But after just my bachelor's degree, Oliver Jackson was a terrific painting instructor there.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that doing it for money is not the first. You know, you do it because you just really love it, and it may not ever make any money. It's something a self-love thing, and I accepted that. It took 8 years or so of, and I was painting landscapes. I had other ideas, but if I painted landscapes, at least people would look at them,
mm-hmm.
and you could get a show. And after about 8 years, I finally got into graduate school. Wayne wrote me a letter. And I didn't understand how you call it gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand how that worked. I thought somebody was wandering out there in a shopping center somewhere that discovered artists, and you suddenly had a show in New York. But I realized, oh, this is a very involved thing. And once Wayne wrote me a letter, then I got accepted in Idaho, and I had a great time up there as a graduate student, and I just loved it, everything. And in that point, I learned that the paintings, that I could just paint what I wanted to paint from some deep inside place, and it was okay.
Right.
You know, that. Unfortunately, when I did that, it also meant that if I painted paintings from this deep inside place, there wasn't anybody that was going to show them around where I lived. And I'd have these paintings, and I just loved them. But so that's what. Eventually, after I got out of grad school, I taught. I taught up at Lake Tahoe for a year. Terrific, and you fall in love with your students. And I don't mean that in a sexual. I mean in their work. That you don't any longer care about your work as much as your students. So after a year. I thought, no, I still have things I need to do with my work. So then I just took a part-time. I taught Wednesday night figure painting on campus at UC Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that on Wednesday nights for about 3 years. And then just said, well, if I'm going to paint what I really want to paint, I've got to go to New York.
Ah.
There's more people there. And if you're limiting who's going to look at your work, and you're in an area that's got a million people, it's better be in an area with a million people.
Okay, so now we're getting at kind of the differences between the art world in LA and the art world in New York. So what are some more, you know, the state of the arts? Like, what is the difference between LA and New York to you for painters?
Well, yeah, and I just think it's a real clear difference to me that New York is still the art center.
Yeah.
And you hear everybody claiming, no, it's L.A. or it's Shanghai now or it's mm-hmm. Berlin. But when I'm in New York, I see these people that have been successful in those areas, and they are all trying to show in New York. They want to be successful, but it's not until they show in New York that it really happens. And I didn't invent the art world. You know, I'm just saying what I've observed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because there's more real people that truly love art and are willing to make it part of their life there. So that's, I think it's still more important. It might not be the same 5 or 10 years from now.
Right.
But right now, and that's what brought, that's what took me there, that if you could make it in New York, you could make it anywhere. And there was just more, there's a feeling of anonymity in New York. You kind of have a license to do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy. And there was a YouTube video that was circulating this last week of some guys doing Shakespeare on the subway. You know, the subway, it just, that sort of epitomizes what it's like. And so then if I was painting around locally, there would be a lot of people that didn't really like what I did, but in New York I could just do whatever I want to do.
That's interesting.
Somebody will show up to sit, look at it.
Right. Well, then let's name your art practice. Like, what is it that you actually do? Because it kind of sounds like you've got a lot of skills, that you love painting, and so you paint. But, like, what else can you do? Like, is it about your practice, or is it about painting? What is it about? Like, what is your
practice? Well, gosh, Monica, that's such a great question. I think the painting, I mean, what I think really motivates, it's because it's a joy to do.
Mm-hmm.
I like things that I don't have to watch a clock or anything, if that sort of generalizes what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And painting does that. But if you're doing a sculpture piece, you know, I like sculpture, video. I like music. I like music and writing, too, but those two things I'm not very good at. So that's why I paint, because painting is sort of the easy way out for me.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But I like doing all those other things. And I've got projects going now that on things other than painting. But painting is where it's kind of the mothership. I can go there, and it's always available. I did a bunch of big steel pieces for a while, and I was very happy that at Sac State I actually had a show of them. But to do big steel pieces, you need a big place to work.
Right.
And painting, you know, I can be out hiking or something, and I've got a little drawing pad, and I can draw 2D.
Mm-hmm.
It's just available and accessible, and I think that's what's been an issue with me in my art career. Video, you need a lot of computer technology, and each time you've got to stay with that a lot because it keeps updating and updating.
Right.
But drawing just has this basic availability to the human, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what happens in your head when Dear Andy gets picked up? Like, what phone call, conversation, situation were you in when then you got the show, a show, for your Dear Andy paintings?
Well, I think, you know, if I can go back to talk a little bit about how I came to the Dear Andy, I think it sort of answers that question, too, with some insight. Because when I was doing this juxtaposition of two different items, like I said, the Picasso with Chinese vases over the top of them.
Mm-hmm.
When I got to Warhol, there was a gold Marilyn that the Met was really proud of. And when I painted the gold Marilyn as an underpainting, and I put a still life over the top of it, it just really cracked me up.
Uh-huh.
And I just got a kick out of that, and I think it probably has to go back. At the time, it was all subconscious, but since I've been doing it for a number of years, it goes back to my art education, being around Wayne and pop art, and I realized, you know, I'm educated as a pop artist. it was sort of a revelation kind of thing. And when I did that with the Warhol, I just felt this universal feeling of connectedness, a connectedness in what I'm doing in my time that nobody else would ever have done, or the experiences of my past have brought all this together, mm-hmm. that it makes it something that you don't want to stop doing. And I'm always ready for when something else comes along, I'll stop doing it. But nothing else has come along. I still get a kick out of it. It still makes me laugh. And each new I call them series, but new ideas keep coming to me that are based on this same format or the same original universal idea of this juxtaposition of two sides of pop art.
Mm-hmm.
And I just continue to explore them. New ideas come to me. You're curious about that, or
yes.
Okay.
So exactly. That's more of like where do you find inspiration? Where do these ideas come from?
Well, it's kind of like I'm just being dumb going through life, but yet being as an artist, trained as an artist, there will be something that pops into my head. And I've heard other people talk about this, whether musicians or a writer, that an idea pops in your head out of nowhere. You're just goofing. You're just enjoying your life going on. And all of a sudden, this most bizarre idea will pop in your head. And I kind of think that defines an artist, too, is that you're cognizant of it, where I'm sure these ideas pop into everybody's heads. But it's either you're trained not to go that way because it's such so craziness, you know, or like I now know that when those ideas pop in your head, they're like a gift. Mm. And if I don't write them down or act on them, they're gone. You know, I can think like the next day and go, gosh, what was that idea? And unless I put energy out on my part to solidify that idea, it's gone. And the current ideas that I'm working with Andy was on bird watchers. And my wife and I were out camping on this island, and we got invaded by bird watchers. They all showed up. And it was the sooty churn. Everyone was coming to look at the sooty churn, and they were nesting, and we were camping there for 3 days, and by the end of the time, I was very interested in sooty churns, and I'm sketching, and you have to ride a ferry out to this island 75 miles off the coast of Florida, and I on the last day, I'm on the ferry early. It might have been because of the air conditioning, but other than that, I was on the ferry early, and I just pulled out my sketchbook and I started working, and all of a sudden I was possessed, and I'm still working today. You know, that's what I have around me, and I'll just follow this idea that just popped into my head from just living life. You're just living life, doing things that are going to be fun, and all of a sudden, here it is. But I think not only do I know enough now to stop and honor that thought, but I get real pleasure out of it.
Absolutely.
You know, I can't think of what I'd be doing in life if I'm not following that creative idea. And I'm sure that anybody that looks at me is just going, what is he doing? What, he's wasting his time. What a lazy guy, you know. But somehow an artist has to have that ability to go, to live on your own, to have strength, inner strength, that these ideas are valuable. And they may not be valuable to anybody outside my skin, but that's not your concern.
One of our listeners actually just Skyped me a question. She says,
okay.
She says, Mel, how do you find the space, the mental space and the physical space to make the work you want to make and still have the money to afford living?
You know, that is the artist's dilemma. And and I think what to answer the question, to what makes it a lot easier is to recognize that you are doing something productive when you're being an artist. Because if you don't have that strength, then we live in a commercial world. I mean, it's a material world, and all those pressures are too much to overcome. I mean, it happened to me. I gave up art for that time, and so you have to be very strong. And to be very strong, then that means you live simply. You know, all your friends are driving, Janis Joplin said, a new Mercedes-Benz or a Porsche, you know.
Yeah.
But you've just got to be happy to have a 10-year-old truck.
Right.
And live simply. And I think that's the hardest part. And when I see illustrators that very much into commercial art, that is the most difficult. Because if you're tied into the material world, you can't follow these quirky little ideas that pop in your head. You're always too busy.
Right.
You know? And so for me, and maybe – you know, somebody that maybe has a lot more family or money or influences, those gatekeepers are different than mine. There may be another way, but I just have to live simply and be humble, which is hard to say here. I'm on the radio talking, but it's basically really a humbleness and a monk-like thinking of life, just enjoying very simple things. And you know, I don't turn money down. If money's there, that's great. And if you can own that Mercedes, that's great. There's nothing wrong with it, but
right.
that it has its proper place, and that's that the art, the joy of creating is going to be first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers the question. Do you think I covered it, Monica?
I think so. I think so. And so, Mel, are you famous?
No, no, I'm. I'm just struggling. You know, I don't have a gallery. I had a gallery in New York in 97.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a fluke. It was just one of those things. Monique Goldstrom.
Yep.
And I found myself an artist in California with a New York gallery. And it was wonderful. She did some terrific things for me. But eventually she passed away.
Mm.
The gallery's in Soho. Back when Soho, you know, as Chelsea was just coming on strong. So she passed away in 2005, and I haven't had a gallery since then. I have people that have my work. I have work placed in different galleries. But when you have a gallery that it's actually representing you, you're just free to work. You know, yeah, they really do a wonderful job, and Monique did she got my work in museums. She was placing it all around, and it was terrific. You know. But otherwise, no, I'm not famous. I think today, and I wonder about this, but the whole thing with the internet and what we're doing here, it's a new way. I mean, this is our time. This is the times we live in. So the formula that worked, like, let's say for Andy or my teacher, Tebow, is not the same formula that's going to work for me. And when you read, or I've had the opportunity to talk to Wayne this way, but for Andy, I had to read and see how history has documented them. But they all, but both those guys were really winging it. They didn't know. And this thing about chance and timing and or the cliche being in the right place at the right time, I think that's all pretty much. And And the time that I had teaching, I came to the realization there's a lot of Rembrandts out there.
Yeah.
And they give it up because of that struggle, or they just never get discovered. But I see some great painters. And my friends that I know, both here in California and in New York, there's some really great painters. But, you know, it's just life. It's just the human existence. Some people are going to get picked out. Maybe they get picked out for the wrong reasons, but they're going to get picked out. Others just keep painting, and I think if it's in your soul, and you know that's where your joy comes from, you just keep painting. it'd be great.
And going hungry in your 10-year-old truck.
Well, you have to live within your means. You got to be simple.
Right.
But if that means you got to work at the local coffee house, and you've got to live with 5 other people to be where you need to be, then you got to do that. I certainly have done that thing. And
yeah, and this, I mean, what you're saying, Mel, I think is really resonating with a lot of listeners and with me. I mean, that's really good advice for, like, emerging, even veteran artists, even not-so-well-known artists who just need to figure out what they're going to do and how to do it. Like, share with us, like, what the biggest mistakes or the hardest moments or the most challenging lessons that you've learned throughout your career.
Oh, well, Monica, we didn't practice this question.
You're welcome. This is the test.
But I think learning, it's really an inside job. You know, it's really that deep. And using another cliche, I have like a Buddha consciousness. I call myself a California Buddhist, you know. But it's having that strength. We all have these lower chakras that are so important to us of wanting to be accepted and having a place to live and all that. But it's like understanding those. For me, coming to grips with living in that material world and how to do it was probably the hardest thing but sometimes, you know, you have to hit like a bottom. You have to. And when my life fell apart, when my little material train jumped the tracks, and I couldn't afford the toys and the relationship and, you know, everything that you valued and everything gets trashed, you have to pick yourself up. And that's where you find some real strength. And I don't think I could have done it.
Right. And this is such an interesting time and a good opportunity for artists right now because, you know, on the back end of like a kind of failing economy and galleries are closing and everyone's turning toward alternative spaces. And I spoke with a group of ladies yesterday about how their gallery's in their home and they open their home and their backyard up to like video installation and performance art. This is a good opportunity to kind of pick yourself up in the means that you have available. Oh, Mel is gone. Mel, come back. He left us. That's okay. what in the world? Oh, Mel, we miss you. Well, anyways, I was reading this Union Hall Gallery. He's back with us. But like I was saying, I was reading how a critic, SACB art critic, Victoria Dalkey, wrote in 1999 that, you know, his work is reminiscent of his teacher Wayne that he was talking about, and that the textures and the layers of the paint and all of that points to a new direction. So I was going to ask Mel, welcome back.
Thank you.
I was going to ask Mel, how do you know, well, I don't know if you missed this. I was talking about how this is a good opportunity for artists to kind of pick themselves up with the means that they have. And then I had an interview yesterday with a couple of ladies who opened up their home as their art exhibition space and have artists make proposals to show in their living room that sort of thing.
That's cool.
So I was going to ask you, what direction do you see your work going? Are you always going to be or want to be a gallery artist? Are there alternatives for what you do?
Monica, I think I'm living the alternative.
Yeah.
And until that 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 Chelsea Gallery, you know, makes some kind of a big breakthrough and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a matter of life. It's the choice is there, and that you got to just keep working and making work. I for a while I was doing public art, and in fact, I there's a train station in Sacramento that has my work, and the experience of that is that it's such an that process is such against art or anti-art in order to make art. You have to have your inner strength so that you don't rely on that. Nobody's going to do it for you, and no one's going to come along and hand you public arts commissions and grants. You just got to keep working, and I think that's that alternative that maybe you're referring to.
And that's such a good lesson. Those are good words, Mal. We're going to quote you on the website. And actually, it's perfect timing because we're out of time. But I want you to tell everyone where they can find your work, any organizations or galleries that are showing, all the galleries that you're in, any collaborations that you're going to participate in the upcoming months or year. Like, let us know.
Okay. Well, as far as showing, there are some things happening. And again, it's nice when things show up. There's a gallery that shows my work in Chicago, and I got an email last week, Bob Furman there. It's called the 23rd Atmosphere Gallery. It's in South Chicago by the university. It's a terrific space.
Wow.
And so we're going to do a show. They have Chicago has a art night, and I'm not sure when that is, October or November. The city turns out for this weekend, and Bob was saying that we'll have a show by then. So I don't have the details on that. We just talked. He just wanted to know last week if we could do it, and it went great.
Yay!
And then I'm going to do an art fair in New York, and that's going to be in November. It's the Contemporary Art Fair at the. This one's going to be at the Jacob Javits. It's a brand new art fair. I kind of quit doing the art fairs this last year. It just got very expensive and very much with the material, the commercial side. And I didn't like what was happening to me. So I said, I'm backing off. But this new art fair started, and they asked for submissions supposedly, I've got a booth there, and I'm looking forward to doing that.
Supposedly?
Yeah. Well, see, what it was is that they had a competition, and the artist got there's a certain area that's supposed to be for emerging artists.
I see.
So, and then in California, in Davis, California, at the Pence Gallery, it's a great little space. And I'm going to have a show. Natalie Nelson is curating that show, and she's been to my storage unit and picked out paintings. And it's going to be not just the Dear Andy that I'm involved in now, but a pulling of different series that I've done. And that'll be in December of this year. Otherwise, my website, which is melsmothers.com, easy enough. And there are galleries that I am working with that, like I say, have my work. And when anybody goes into that site, it says current events. And if you click the current events, it'll have where the work is available. But, of course, you can look at all the work on the site.
Right.
I just put everything up as I'm going along.
Amazing. Well, Mal, this has been really great. And our listeners love you. I've got a lot of feedback, so I'll send that to you in a couple of minutes and all of the links so you can share with your crowd. And, you know, best of luck to you, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, yeah, it's been good being able to talk about the work. Thanks for offering that, Monica.
A lot out of it. You got some fans. It's cool.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Oh, he's sweet. I love that. Okay, so that was Mel Smothers, and like he told you, his website's www.melsmothers.com. And, yeah, if you guys have any questions or suggestions, and please, like, if you guys want to listen in or call in, you just go to the Blog Talk Radio, and at any time, just email me and let me know if you want to participate or talk in on a show, like, as a guest speaker, like, if you have a question or something, and I'll give you the guest call-in number, and you can always participate in the show. So far, people are just kind of, you know, emailing me or messaging me or Skyping me, you know, questions. That's how we got that one question in the middle of the show from a girl named Melanie from Wisconsin. Kind of cool. Okay, so that's our show. This is Monica, your favorite Gist jockey. We're still giving away Gist Pro 3.2. So if you want a copy, you can Twitter, Gist Radio on Twitter. Or that's my Twitter handle, Gist Radio, GYSTRADIO. And, you know, I'm on Facebook. Just type in Gist Radio, GYSTRADIO. And if you want more information about the theme song or if you want to listen to the theme song, just let me know. I want to listen to the theme song. So here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present
Hello and welcome to Gist Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. Gist stands for Getting the Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creatives of all kinds. For more information on Gist, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.